Are we ready to resume? Okay, we're going to get going again. If we can get other conversations out in the hall, please. Matt McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would have to run this by the seconder, but given the issues that this is raising, perhaps to simplify the process, I would like to continue ahead with sections 1 and 3 of this motion, but if it's okay with the second, or perhaps strike section 2 to simplify the process.
And well, Mr. Chairman, I would actually like to keep number 2 in. So,
you would have to go through an amending process to remove that.
May I make a motion to amend the substitution?
In this case, yes.
I promise I'll never do this again. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to amend the substitution to remove point 2. If I need a second.
Is there a second to that? Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in light of the confusion this is causing and the uncertainty, this allows me to focus in on what I was trying to do, which is, I think, better laid out in points 1 and 3, which are now points 1 and 2. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience for comments on this. Maggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, I don't support the motion to amend the substitute and fully support the substitute motion. I'm not sure how the maker came to such a different decision, but I would really urge the council to support the motion to substitute and not the motion to amend the substitute. Thank you.
Further comment from the public? I can't see who it is who's got their hand back up there. Dave.
David Frula, Fisheries Survival Fund. I don't understand why this was put in and what the rationale is for taking it out. If it's NEPA, it would seem that the issue there is that you would segment an action to try to avoid analysis in the second action by dividing it into such little parts that the environmental significance could be considered less. Here, if you're dividing it because you want to be able to do more extensive analysis and perhaps two EISs, if that's the course you want to take, I don't see, it's a legal issue. I don't know what other concerns there might be, but I certainly wouldn't worry about that.
Anyone else? Vito?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, we also thought the original motion that included the juvenile was important and supported that motion, but this amendment is not nearly as good. I wouldn't say we oppose it, but it's not nearly as good as the one with the juvenile. Would trying to figure out why that was pulled out. We're hoping that could be reconsidered.
Greg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg Cunningham with the Conservation Law Foundation. Just a point of clarification from the maker, if possible. Wondering whether the inclusion of juvenile protection measures in the list of frameworkable items is with the intent of excluding juvenile protective measures from the omnibus habitat amendment, or for creating the ability in the future to modify or add to omnibus habitat amendment juvenile protection areas using the framework mechanism.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The intention was to, and this was coming out of the comments by the SSC chair yesterday, to facilitate the ability for us to craft our conservation and habitat measures to changing circumstances, so as to facilitate and expedite protection for juvenile fish protection. That was the intention.
But retain the ability to address those as part of the current omnibus habitat amendment?
Yes.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Okay, Mary Beth and then Dave Gaethel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do not support this motion to amend the substitute motion. I support the original substitute motion. I think that this discussion about inclusion of juvenile protection measures was fully vetted at, I believe it was the Joint Groundfish and Habitat Committee, and they were recommended for many reasons that would not continue. I supported the concept, however, of including the analysis because I think it has, you know, at this point gone down the road quite a ways, but not considering the alternatives because I think that's sort of a middle ground versus taking everything out. And so I think your original motion really spoke to that much better than this, because with this now we're just back to them being in there, and I don't think that question or this discussion will be done in today or tomorrow, depending on when we conclude this agenda item. So I think it's better that it stay in, that we talk about doing it and what the ramifications of that really are, and have the conversation all together. So for those reasons, I support the original substitute motion.
Dave Gaethel.
I have a question, and the question is this stands right now, the only difference between this and the original motion eons ago is it added in juvenile protection measures as a frameworkable item. Is that correct? Because I can't remember exactly what the wording is of the original motion.
I believe that's correct, yes.
John Bowen.
Yeah, I speak in favor of this substitute motion because it does include the spawning and juvenile protection, and I think that's necessary to include in this amendment.
Tom Dempsey.
Just trying to wonder what we mean by juvenile protection measures. In my mind, our juvenile protection measures are gear restrictions, minimum fish sizes, and overall mortality caps. I mean, at least in groundfish, that's how we manage juvenile mortality. If we're talking about a different approach to managing juvenile mortality that's area-based, then I'm not sure that is in a framework. I mean, the way I look at our habitat amendment options, we don't have juvenile habitat management areas. We have only one type of habitat management proposed area. Some are derived by SASE. Some are derived by the CAT analysis. But they're all the same. And they all are aimed at protecting sensitive or important bottom. So to shift this, you know, I'll have to support this motion to substitute because I think we don't actually, you know, we don't have an area-based juvenile protection mechanism in place. That's not how we manage juvenile mortality, at least in groundfish. And our juvenile mortality protections that we do have are already frameworkable. We just change the minimum fish sizes. We can change the gear requirements, mesh restrictions, or what have you, already in a framework. The clear message, I should say, from the service is we need a full range of habitat alternatives in this document. That includes SASE-derived alternatives and CAT-derived alternatives. I believe this substitute motion gets us closer to that. And the underlying motion absent that substitute absent that substitution, is getting us farther away from that. I think it leaves us in the same spot we were at the end of our May 17th meeting. So I'll have to support the motion to substitute, but I really do think we should question what we mean by juvenile protection measures that aren't currently frameworkable.
Mary Beth.
Well, I think we have gotten down a couple layers here, so it's getting a little confusing because I was a little uncertain. I think I know what Tom just said, but he kept referencing the motion to substitute. We have a motion to amend the substitute motion, so it wasn't totally clear to me what he meant. The other thing about what Tom just said is that we have juvenile protection measures for juvenile mortality. In my recollection from the conversations around the analysis done by the CAT is that it's not tied to juvenile mortality. That was something different. And so somehow I think I your comments were confusing to me. I understood exactly what you said as far as what we currently have for juvenile mortality protections, and I totally agree with that. And I think because the juvenile protection measures being analyzed by the CAT do not address mortality, that there don't seem to be direct links to overall groundfish production, that there's been angst about this in general. And as far as addressing the goals and objectives in the amendment, then I think if you were to move it to a groundfish amendment, you're moving everything. You're moving the goals and objectives, and you're moving the juvenile protection areas, and it allows for some of the things that the SSC is recommending as far as, working with the industry, looking at the measures more closely, and I just don't think they're ready. So, again, I guess all of my comments really are, to be clear, that I don't support the motion to amend. I support the motion to substitute. Thank you.
Doug Grout, and then we're going to see if we can get one of these layers done.
So I guess I need some clarification from the maker of the motion. When I read number two, I saw that because we're going to add spawning and juvenile protection measures to the omnibus habitat amendment. This is we were going to add spawning and juvenile habitat protection measures. Not juvenile protection, but habitat protection measures. Maybe it should be clear, just to make that clear. When I heard some of the discussion here, people were taking that as this is literally we're going back, as Mr. Dempsey said, to minimum fish sizes and mesh sizes and stuff. So maybe we should have a friendly that says spawning and juvenile habitat protection measures are on the list of frameworkable items.
I'll accept that as a friendly.
A seconder accept that? Okay. Further discussion? I'm going to call the question. Okay, I'm going to call a question on the motion to amend the substitute motion. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Which did you? Okay. 9 in favor. Opposed? 8. The motion to amend the substitute carries. Now we're back on the substitute motion as amended. Further discussion. Call the question. All those in favor of the substitute motion as amended. Opposed. 7. Opposed. The motion carries. Dave Preble.
Thank you. Okay, we're going on to the third.
Oops.
Whoops.
substitute. Now you need to approve the main motion.
Yep, we're back onto the main motion as substituted. Thank you, Gene. That's why we shouldn't get three layers deep. Further discussion. Call the question. All those in favor of the main motion as substituted. 10. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 10-7-0. That carries. Dave Preble.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're on to the third motion. The third motion was that the designated habitat management area should only extend inshore to the state federal waters boundary, and that one passed 8-0-2.
It's a committee motion, doesn't need a second. I'm thinking that this one shouldn't be complicated. Can we do this by unanimous consent, or do we want to take over state waters and manage those as well?
Yes.
Is there any objection to including this? Okay, seeing none.
Wow. Okay. Motion number four. The committee recommends to the council that it in. We got it up there yet? Number four. Okay. The committee recommends to the council that it include for analysis in the DEIS the following: Western Gulf of Maine Alternative 2, Western Gulf of Maine Alternative 3, and Western Gulf of Maine Alternative 5. And that one passed 7-4-2.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. Any comments on this motion? Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to make my comments sort of generic to all of the motions that will be coming up with regards to habitat management areas. And I think some of the comments I made earlier were somewhat mischaracterized by a council member in response. What I was trying to say is that we've had spawning closures, we've had mortality closures, we've had habitat closures, we've had juvenile cod protection closures for two decades, and we still have not enhanced the productivity of groundfish. So my point is, why do we continue to go down this road? Any alternative that has been proposed by the committee or by the industry for alternatives that do not involve closures have not been developed. In June 2010, the committee recommended development of a no-closure alternative, but instead to reduce impacts by maximizing CPUE. There is no such alternative in the document. At the April meeting, the council recommended that, directed the PDT by a strong vote to develop gear modification options for both Georgia Shoals areas and the Great Salt Channel, and the PDT developed an option for only the Georgia Shoals area. So there's definitely, I mean, what we're looking at here is just more closures, nothing reasonable to take the place of closures, and that is very problematic. Again, because we have not, I mean, it just furthers this mythology that somehow these areas will enhance productivity of groundfish when they have not, simply have not done that. Also, the SSC recommended, and this was recommended by the industry at one of the recent meetings, that performance measures need to be developed to measure whether or not any of these habitat management measures actually achieve the goals, and that we haven't seen any such performance measures be developed. We have no mechanism except for a framework action to modify any of these areas, but what would we base that on? What would we base that on? We have no performance measures to determine whether or not, and particularly in the case of the goal of enhancing productivity, how are we going to measure that? So I strongly urge you to develop some performance measures for these areas so that we don't end up 20 years later with areas closed and groundfish in the shape that it is in today. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smallwoods, Fisheries Survival Fund. I just want to make one quick general comment now. I'm going to save most of my comments for the South Channel area. In the quest to have a complete range of alternatives for NEPA, I do not understand why there does not exist for each area a no-closure option. Is there any particular reason why we do not have a no-closure option for each area? You know, in the past, we had obviously the status quo, but in this particular case, status quo includes extensive closures. So I'm just wondering, from a NEPA standpoint, shouldn't it be appropriate that each area have a no-closure option?
I don't know if they're conferring. We'll see if we can get you an answer at some point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone? Is that? I can see an arm back there, but I can't see who's attached to Greg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg Cunningham with the Conservation Law Foundation. Just wanted to register Conservation Law Foundation's support for including these alternatives for analysis into the DEIS, in particular the inclusion of the juvenile protection areas, which reflect a density of juveniles. The EFH rules are clear in indicating that density of species or classifications of species is reflective of value, and the greater the density, the greater the habitat value that is to be assumed. So we support the usage of the juvenile protection mechanism. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. I see Peter Kendall and David Pierce and Terry Alexander.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will not be supporting this motion. I did not support this motion at the committee meeting. I understand that, you know, it is just for now, for just this point to be analyzed, but, I mean, I can do a... first of all, we shouldn't be worried about the juvenile groundfish habitat area. We already have plenty of protection for juvenile groundfish, which Mr. Dempsey had said earlier, with gear modifications and 12-inch rockhoppers and size limits and everything. And I can tell you right now that an economic analysis on these areas would be devastating to most of the coast of Maine and all of New Hampshire. Thank you.
David Pierce.
Yeah, Peter makes a good point. I appreciate the concerns expressed by fishermen who fish in that area with mobile gear, notably the Bigelow Bight area. I'm assuming that with these options being, if they're adopted, I'm assuming the analyses will give us a far better understanding of the nature of the impact on fishermen who fish in those areas with mobile gear. It is a rather large area. Perhaps after public hearing, we'll determine, especially after further examination of the database that we've already looked at, but we need to take another look at it, we may be able to refine it and modify the boundaries, cut it down somewhat to deal with, for example, the economic impacts. So we have to have something to bring to public hearing. I think these options make sense, but I am also sharing some of the uncomfortableness expressed by Peter. Another reason why I'm uncomfortable is that while it's important to provide habitat protection from mobile gear, because these areas would have restrictions on mobile gear, prohibitions on mobile gear. Fixed gear would be allowed in the areas. So we essentially are creating potentially rather large fixed gear only areas for gill netting only, for long lining. But gill netting obviously attracts my attention since, let's face it, mobile gear fishermen tend to be an impediment to fixed gear fishermen, and that fixed gear fishermen are not necessarily going to fish as much gear as they would like or where they want for fear that mobile gear might get into it and remove it accidentally, of course. I've dealt with this issue in Massachusetts waters for decades now, mobile gear versus fixed gear. How do you balance the interests? So that's a concern to me. They become fixed gear only areas, and we, as noted by the technical team and also by the committee, we shift effort to other areas. For example, with the Bigelow Bite area as proposed in these alternatives, I could easily see more mobile gear effort in Ipswich Bay, fishing on spawning codfish. It's a problem. But anyways, we need options to deal with this habitat protection, and these seem to be the best ones. Now, one other point. Sarah, Stellwagen Bank. Stellwagen Bank, in their ecological research area, they have dramatically cut back on their first proposal they offered up, so-called Sarah 1, where they had a rather, I wouldn't say complicated scheme, but they certainly had boundaries brought farther inshore and more restrictions on different use within that particular area. They cut it back dramatically. They've compromised on what they feel they need, and now they've arrived at this particular option that they feel is appropriate. However, there is one part of this area that is going to be controversial, and that is the lower blue box shown on page 15, one of the options, because this would be an area in which recreational fishing is prohibited. Recreational fishermen obviously are concerned about that. My understanding is the sanctuary has attempted to work with recreational fishermen to determine the importance of that area to them. I don't know how far they've gone with their discussions with recreational fishermen. I see this now as an opportunity, if we adopt this option, and with this reference area, with no recreational fishing in it, I see this as an opportunity for recreational fishermen to weigh in, to comment on it, and to maybe have more interaction, more dialogue with the sanctuary to see if indeed this is the area they absolutely need, or if the area can actually be modified somewhat to deal with the interests of recreational fishermen, party and charter fishermen in particular, who have expressed some concern to me about the area. So I want to see this Sarah option brought forward to public hearing with an anticipation that we'll get some very good public input, and eventually we'll be able to make an informed decision about what we should do there. So those are my concerns, and that's my expression of support for the motion.
Terry Alexander.
Yeah, I'm going to cancel out Dave and say that I oppose it. I oppose it because I don't think the science is right with it. I mean, that area that we're talking about closing on Bigelow Bike gets more passes than any place in the Gulf of Maine, probably, from Middlebank to Portland, between the shrimp season, the whiting season, the herring season, the groundfish year, and it's been getting passes for the 40 years I've been going. And if we have impacted juvenile areas, why are they lighting up as juvenile areas? I just can't believe that we're doing any damage mopping down across those edges. So I'm going to oppose that for that reason.
Laura Ramson.
I had a question. If we pass this, does it preclude making a later motion that would offer up the no closure option for each of these areas? So I don't want to pass this and then come back and say, no, actually, Ron's right. We should have a no-closure option for each of these areas, citing things like improved CPUE, gear modifications, the fact that we have reduced fishing effort tremendously. I mean, the amount of boats that are actually towing nets in, or setting nets in any of these areas is significantly lower than it once was. So there are a lot of variables that can also be considered in terms of whether we're protecting habitat. So I'm concerned that if this passes, we will lose the chance to add the no-closure option, which I think is actually a good one.
I don't see a problem of coming back and adding that. But. Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My comments are somewhat similar to David Pierce's, but in addition, they're fairly generic concerning the motion on the board and many of the upcoming motions. I'm going to support this motion, and that's because my expectation is that the committee and the industry will significantly refine these areas into core areas of juvenile habitat protection that will allow for fishing opportunities and address what I consider the very legitimate issues raised by the industry.
Mary Beth Tooley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if I can support the motion with the habitat protection areas in there. For many of the reasons that people around the table have expressed and their concerns, and I have a question. If we don't have direct links to productivity from these juvenile habitat areas, and the economic and social impacts are going to be so significant, which I'm sure that they are, and we reach a decision-making point in which we choose none because the analysis is just not there, yet we have goals and objectives in the amendment, is that a problem to have goals and objectives and then at final decision making the council says, you know what, this is not fully supported and by the analysis we're not going to choose any of them? Does that leave the council in a bad position relative to the goals and objectives in the amendment?
We don't have an answer for you right at the moment, but again, we'll continue to work on that to get back to you on that.
So just in the short term here, if we have to vote on this motion, I will not be supporting it because I think that's, you know, a very significant thing to understand here.
I have Vince Balzano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I cannot support this motion. The reason I can't support this motion is we spent this morning talking about Amendment 18 and fleet diversity. And I look at any one of these alternatives, in my opinion, you will eliminate the inshore main fleet and the entire New Hampshire fleet. Thank you.
Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Clearly, I understand what the potential impacts are to the fleet, particularly the New Hampshire fleet, because in our state waters, we already have a year-round closure to mobile gear. So if this is implemented, they can't go into state waters at certain times of year and fish, at least our bottom trawlers. But I also know that we need to have some alternatives in here for analysis so that we can look at what the impact, the biological impacts to the stocks are, as well as the social and economic impacts to the industry and the communities are. We need to have that in there so that we can make informed decisions on to which measures within this habitat amendment we are going to choose to implement to try and achieve our goals and objectives. Without it, I can only make a speculative decision. So I'm going to vote that this be included as an option, just like I did at the Habitat Committee, I hope the rest of you will agree to include this for analysis.
Dave Gaethel.
I can't support this because it's the wrong area. It's that simple. This is what I said it at every meeting. And the previous vote makes things problematic that we can't discuss where the right area is, which is state waters. We have an HAPC for juvenile cod from 0 to 20 meters, if anybody remembers back to phase one. And 0 to 20 meters is in state waters. And I believe, Lou can correct me if I'm wrong, that was in from Cape Cod North, right? So basically what we're trying to do is backfill what we can't do, or what we say we can't do, but and we've left this huge logical inconsistency in that how are you going to defend an HAPC for juvenile cod when you didn't even close the place to mobile gear? If you actually believe mobile gear is a problem, which is something else I dispute, but that's for another issue. Even, you know, just so that the gang of five, the SCLF, Earth Justice, NRDC, Oceana, and Puel know I read their letter, their bullet number 8 on page 3 actually supports that position. It says that even though NOAA Fisheries advised the Council of its authority under MSA to address issues in state waters that compromise goals of federal fishery management. I'm in a quandary here. I don't know exactly what to do. I can't support this. I'm tempted to make a motion to substitute. But I'd actually like to hear from the service about this issue with state waters, because where this closure belongs is in state waters. It does not belong in the Bigelow Bight area. You know, if you look at all the information we had, the vast majority of the little X's are in state waters. So, you know, maybe somebody from the service could comment on that, and then maybe you could come back to me, and maybe I'll make a motion to substitute, depending on what they say.
John Bullard.
Well, I'm not going to comment on Dave's question. Maybe Lou will. But I do want to make two comments in support of this motion. One is that I do think, and I think Doug Grout made this point, that we need options for consideration. This is not the final action. We're going to get a lot of feedback on this, and this is going to help us tailor these areas when we get feedback from industry on what the boundaries should be. And I'm looking forward to this. The other comment I want to make is the circular reasoning that I'm hearing, which just want to call some attention to, and that is that the argument in favor of no closures is that we have reduced effort, which is, as I think about it, we have reduced effort because we've set very low quotas because the stocks are depleted. So the circular reasoning is that we have depleted stocks, so we've set low quotas, so there's low effort, right? And so if you keep following that, then we won't need any protective areas because there won't be any fish and there won't be any fishermen. So we'll have great habitat. Now, one of the reasons we're considering this amendment is to try and build fish stocks back up. We're trying to break this cycle. And so I don't subscribe to the argument that low fishing effort is a reason or a justification for not having this amendment. It's the justification why we need this amendment. We have to break this cycle. The circular reasoning escapes.
David Pierce.
Yeah, I thought I'd address the point made by David Gethel because it's related to the motion and also the issue that he's raised that might convince some people they should not vote for this particular motion, and that is the location of juvenile fish inside state waters. The issue is, where is the sensitive habitat, and then where does it overlap with juvenile fish? at the Habitat Committee Groundfish Committee meeting, I made available some figures, and I commented on our survey information inside state waters going back to 1978 that shows the distribution of age zero, young of the year, and age one fish, codfish specifically. And when looking at that database, we see that there's an abundance, a great abundance of these young fish in sandy bottom, in sandy mud bottom, in areas that should not be off limits to mobile gear because that is not sensitive habitat. So state waters, specifically I'll comment on Massachusetts, need not be the target of interest of individuals seeking to protect juvenile fish from mobile gear. In addition, in Massachusetts, we have a number of measures implemented that go back many, many years, a vessel size restriction, a night closure to mobile gear fishing, a roller gear restriction, and we have seasonal closures in state waters to mobile gear fishing, with some closures being year-round. So we've done a lot, trying to balance the desire of mobile gear fishermen to have some access to state waters, and I mean federal waters fishermen as well as non-federal permit holders. So in our state, we've done a lot to deal with habitat issues with the intent to protect that habitat, protect juvenile fish, and, of course, to provide some access to mobile gear fishermen. A lot has been done already. So to me, to my way of thinking, as we move this motion forward and other motions relative to this omnibus, it's about where do the juvenile fish overlap with this sensitive habitat, which the CAT has done great work identifying for us. That's why I favor this particular motion, with an understanding that after public hearing and after we look at the analyses, we may have a different perspective and we may modify modify what we bring to public hearing with better choices after we have information in hand.
Terry Alexander. Anyone else on the council? Dave Gaethel.
I'll just take one last bite at the apple because I get the sense that I can't get something passed in state waters. David makes my point exactly with the Bigelow Bite area. The parts of it that are towed are mud and sand. And it has the most... we had a paper here somewhere. I can't find it right now. It had the most tows, the most boats, the most revenue of all the areas we were proposing to deal with. And so it just astounds me that this is going forward. So I have to try a motion to substitute or a motion to amend. And the motion to amend will be to strike the Bigelow Bite area from areas 2, 3, and 5.
Seconded by Peter Kendall. Discussion on the motion to amend. David Pierce, Matt McKenzie.
Very sympathetic. David made some good points regarding the bottom type. Nevertheless, this is an option brought forward to us from the CAT, and it may or may not stand after further analysis, but to remove it now from analysis, it seems to me we put ourselves in, we create a situation where the regional administrator is going to have to jump in and tell us that we are not following through with what he has warned us we must do in that letter that he sent to us dated June 5, where he emphasized the CAT work, the range of alternatives that have been provided by the CAT, and he's suggesting that we consider the recommendations as we proceed with the amendment, and this is one of the major recommendations provided by the CAT, I believe, unless I've misunderstood something, but I believe it is. So I don't see how we can remove at this time consideration of the bite.
Matt McKenzie. Laura Ramson.
Well, the regional administrator did send us a letter and made it clear that we had to investigate every option under the sun that was brought to us by the CAT. There was also a comment yesterday that we shouldn't have two alternatives in a herring amendment. So if we are going to take all of these recommendations, four different areas times four and five different alternatives, and we're going to carve out one area that we don't think belongs in there. Hearing from fishermen, I hardly think that we are ignoring a wide range of alternatives. We have pages and pages of alternatives brought forth by the CAT, and if we carve one area out that we don't think is necessary, I hardly think that we are reducing our obligations to be investigating closures.
Doug Grout.
Yeah, I can't support this motion as written. You know, I certainly understand where David's coming from with this, but I do think we need to have something for analysis. I could certainly support a motion that might remove one of these alternatives, or a couple of the alternatives, so there's only one, if we're trying to reduce workload. But motion is crafted right now, I can't support it unless we have some alternative in there.
Further discussion? Mary Beth.
I'll be brief. I support the motion to amend.
Anyone else? Call the question.
I request a roll call.
Andy, make a comment.
Yeah, just quickly review where this area came from. I want to point out this is really the only area that that remains in the alternatives that the CAT recommended for the Western Gulf of Maine. It was originally, we originally had a Mass Bay area, and we originally had a larger Bigelow Bight area. And through further analysis, in combination with the substrate vulnerability information coming from the SASE model, we scaled both of these back to the essential areas, and we have two versions of that in these alternatives. The Bigelow Bight area, it was an area that was had a higher SASE vulnerability that also was associated with the presence of juvenile groundfish. Thank you.
Request for a roll call vote. Please answer yes, no, or abstain. David Gaethel?
Yes.
Doug Grout?
No.
Peter Kendall?
Yes.
Matt McKenzie?
No.
David Pierce?
No.
Dave Preble?
No.
John Quinn?
Yes.
Laura Ramsden?
Yes.
Terry Stockwell?
No.
Mary Beth Tooley?
Yes.
Mark Alexander?
No.
Terry Alexander?
Yes.
Vincent Balzano?
Yes.
Frank Blount?
No.
John Bullard?
No.
Tom Dempsey?
No.
Mark Gibson?
No.
Motion fails on a vote of 7 yes, 10 no.
We're back on the main motion. Further discussion. Mary Beth.
So going back to my question earlier on the main motion, and as Andy pointed out, the Bigelow Bight in these alternatives, although they're not all exactly the same, is the only option in for this area. And an awful lot of people sitting around this table do not support it at all if we get to final decision making and we choose not to do this. And I don't mean modify it into something smaller, but decide not to do it. Then is that a problem relative to the goals and objectives in this amendment?
factual question. Does it make it inconsistent with the goals and objectives? If it does, then it's a legal question that may not be supportable. I would defer to those that know more about this to weigh in.
John.
I don't think the goals and objectives pertain to geographic areas, right, Beth? I think they pertain to the whole area.
So if I could just follow up. In other words, if we come to this final decision-making for the Western Gulf of Maine and choose not to include juvenile habitat protection areas, it's not a problem relative to a stated goal that says we're going to have juvenile protection areas.
I think what you have to look at the whole area at the end and whether the whole area is meeting the goals of the whole area. We're just looking right now at the Western Gulf of Maine, but the goals and objectives are looking at the whole area.
Just one last comment. I mean, as we move through all of these different areas, I think I'm likely to not support any of the juvenile habitat protection areas. So if you were to come back and not choose any of them, does that then leave us with goals and objectives we're not meeting?
Mr. Chair, I think by the same token that it's a goal of the whole area, and if you're not meeting it throughout the whole area, then you're not meeting a goal in the whole area. But I think the goals are the whole area. We're dealing with the sub-region now.
Tom Dempsey.
I think what's getting lost and maybe part of the confusion is we have SASE-driven alternatives in the document. They're in each of these areas. We could get to final action and decide that the SASE-driven alternatives or the status quo alternatives or the CAD-derived alternatives are what we choose to do. But our decisions today don't, at least in my mind, impact whether or not those SASE-derived alternatives are in the document. They already are. Maybe that's a clarification question, but my sense is we could get to final action and say for the Western Gulf of Maine not support a CAT-derived proposed habitat management area, but we would still be able to, upon analysis, meet our habitat objectives, the objectives of the action, through SASE-derived habitat proposed areas. That's my sense of it. I mean, we're talking primarily about CAT-derived alternatives here, but we're not taking out, and no action that the committee took has removed the SASE alternatives from the document. They will continue to be considered and move forward. That's my understanding, at least.
Andy?
Yes, thank you. I also didn't say my last comment that these areas would not be refined as we go along. There's certainly going to become some additional information to come to bear. That being said, this is not entirely driven by just the hotspot analysis. There's multiple lines of evidence, including catches of juvenile groundfish and juvenile cod specifically in the sea sampling data that corroborate a large portion of this area, and as well as information from the literature. So it's a general area worth looking at for further analysis, and some additional refinements of this area would be necessary to make it acceptable.
Okay, we're back on the main motion. Further discussion? Call the question. Those in favor? Ten in favor. Opposed? 7 opposed. The motion carries. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're now on motion number 5. I don't know why these numbers are all screwed up. Okay. All right. Recommend that the council include an option for analysis and a DEIS to prohibit rock hopper gear greater than 12 inches in the following areas as a habitat management measure. One, the existing 12-inch roller gear area in the groundfish FMP. Two, within all the CAT PDT identified areas in the Western Gulf of Maine region, specifically those areas in alternative three, plus the extension of the Sierra 2 area into Massachusetts Bay. And that one passed 9-1-2.
Committee motion, no second. I'll go to the audience. Any comments on this? Bring it back to the council. Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I made this motion at the Habitat Committee meeting. I feel this is very important to recognize what is in place already, and primarily because of some of the things that Dr. Pierce said, that the juveniles are found in fair numbers in these areas, and they are in sandy areas. And this measure, which was put in as a groundfish management alternative, prevents mobile gear from going into complex habitat. So by including this as an option, we are preventing them from going into the complex habitat, which we're trying to protect here. We've already done that. And we're allowing them to fish in the area, in those very areas that the other options would actually close them out of. So I think this is a very important alternative that we have in here for analysis. Just for people's clarification, if we, for example, decided to continue to include the Western Gulf of Maine closure in this, obviously that would be laid on top of this. The point of this is that we need to recognize that we already have a habitat protection measure that's been in place for a number of years, and we need to recognize that and the effects of it.
Anyone else? I'm going to call a question. All those in favor of the motion? -17 Dave Preble.
Getting late. Okay, motion number six. The committee recommends the council include for analysis in the DEIS. Whoops, wait a minute. Stupid computer jumped. Okay, the committee recommends the council include for analysis in the DEIS alternatives 2 and 3 for the central GOM region, Gulf of Maine region, but without the Machias area or the modification of the eastern Maine area.
Committee motion, no second required. I'm going to the public first for comments. Back to the council, Tom Dempsey.
Just to clarify, and for the people who aren't part of the committee that voted this through, this was part a two-part motion that Terry Stockwell brought forth to remove these areas but actually include them in a separate sub-region. So that's what makes it different from the earlier discussion about the removing areas, you know, specific areas from alternatives. So this is the first half of a two-part motion, basically to effectively reclassify some areas into a different sub-region of the Gulf of Maine. And I just say that for the clarification of committee members or council members not on the committee, and I do support this motion.
Thank you for beating me to the punch.
Council comments? Mary Beth?
I'm sorry. I'm still a little confused. Maybe Terry could just elaborate slightly. These two areas, Machias area and the eastern Maine area, are still in the document, but they're someplace else. Is that what Tom is saying?
Yeah, that's correct, Mary Beth. The CAT analysis came with the central and the eastern areas married together, and the Habitat Committee last week was separated into two different analyses.
Further comment? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion? Okay. 17-0-0, unanimous. Dave.
Okay, we're rolling here.
Don't change this.
We all set?
Do you need to ask that to him, right?
Yeah, I think it would be helpful. John, you said something to Mary Beth how we wouldn't be considering juvenile areas at all, but we also have the status quo in there. So isn't that considering juvenile areas, even though we don't choose them in each option?
You mean if status quo is what we end up with? Is that what you mean?
Or status quo, it doesn't say we have to choose juvenile areas. It says consider juvenile areas. There's a huge difference between that. And so if we consider juvenile areas in status quo, then they're considered, and we covered ourselves NEPA-wise, law-wise.
They still need to meet the goals and objectives.
Well,
Tom Neese.
I'm not sure what about this goals and objectives issue, but I would point out that we have had actions in the past. I was reminded that we have had actions in the past where we had stated goals and objectives, and then we did not adopt measures that address those goals and objectives, and the issue was approved. I think, and Deirdre may weigh in here, but probably doesn't really need to, that Scallop Amendment 15 had a goal and an objective of trying to reduce capacity in the scallop fishery. Yet the council decision ultimately was not to adopt the measures that were designed to do that. And yet, so they stayed with the no action alternative, and that for that particular issue anyway, and that was approved.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, I just want to address that for a moment. The goals and objectives are intended to allow us to fulfill the law. They aren't the law. So what Tom is saying is exactly correct.
That woke Gene up.
Yeah, well, no, my earlier point was, you know, for the internal consistency integrity of this, of your council documents, if you have goals and objectives that are not being fulfilled, it just begs the question, why would you have a goal and objective and either not eliminate it or not fulfill it if it's there? And if it isn't, and if you don't have measures to fulfill it, why would you keep the goals and objectives in there if you're not intending on fulfilling them in the document that's sent to the agency? I'm not saying that the agency has to disapprove a document like that, but it does seem to present a problem of the purpose and consistency of the document that you're preparing or the action that you're preparing.
Well, my comment on the situation is that I'm hearing ifs, and there's a lot of presumption as to what the final outcome will be concerning that, and we could sit here all afternoon and do what ifs, but so there, we haven't at this point eliminated the possibility of considering or including them.
Right, and as I'm not sure what Terry was asking, to tell you the truth, that we're seeking an answer for.
Terry?
Well, I was just thinking about covering ourselves in the law if they analyze status quo, which we already have in place, all the areas, they're looking at the juvenile part of it. We're considering it. So that could be considered our juvenile action consideration. And then we just made a motion to move. It's not that we're going to ignore it. We're just going to do it in the proper place, which is under groundfish. So I mean, we have a frameworkable item to move it there. So the status quo could technically cover the juvenile part of our consideration, and then we could, I don't know, that was just a thought I had.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to move on here. Number seven, the committee. The committee recommends the council include for analysis in the DEIS alternatives 3 and 4 for the Eastern Gulf of Maine region, with alternative 4 modified to exclude the larger version of the Eastern Maine area.
Committee motion, no second.
No, passed the committee's 901.
Okay, committee motion, no second. I'm going to go to the audience. Any comment? Jim?
My only comment is that if you're going to consider these type of closures down there, I think you need to consider either all or a section of them to be closed to all fishing, including lobster traps, if you're trying to protect the environment. It's clear that lobster traps catch a lot of codfish, and that's without a doubt, and there's a lot of lobster traps down there. Second issue is the lobster traps have had to convert from floating rope to sinking rope. And we all know that sinking rope has a lot of effect on the bottom. So that it would be nice if you're going to start to go down this road to find have a true closure to see what it will do. We've never had one, right? We know that the closures, well, my opinion is the closures that we've had have not done the job we wanted them to do. It's hence the state of the stock. So try something a little bit different and have a true closure to all fishing and see if you have any results. You'll be able to measure it. Maybe if you have half of it a true closure and the other half just closed to mobile gear, you'll be able to have a comparison. So I think this would be a perfect opportunity to have a true closure.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Mary Beth.
So I actually was going to make this comment on the previous motion, but I think it's fine to ask the question now. But Terry was speaking about status quo. And when I look at the status quo options, that would be our current mortality closures. And I'm wondering if I understand exactly what he was trying to get at. And if I think my question is to really be clear on that, do we need to have status quo options in the document for juvenile habitat protection areas, so that it's clear to the public that status quo means current, habitat closures and ground fish closed areas or whatever, but that choosing status quo we could choose status quo for juvenile protection, or we could choose status quo for current habitat. I mean, I don't think it's clear in the document now, so I mean, I could make a motion to amend that would be relative to all the different areas for status quo for juvenile habitat protection areas, or not, depending on what the interpretation is of the need.
Well, yeah, we're working on this motion at the time. I mean, an overall motion at this point wouldn't be appropriate.
Well, originally, with the previous motion, I thought we could do it area by area, but I think you're right that it could be a broader one motion at the end of the alternatives. But I thought I'd just raise that issue. Maybe it's not needed. But I think it would be clearer.
Doug Grout.
Well, Mary Beth has my exact thoughts, because I needed, if we're going to be looking at this, as the regional administrator said, on the broad area, I mean, for analysis here, we're looking at the smaller areas. Right now, the status quo, we don't have an option where if in one area we choose that we're going to get rid of the current habitat closures, but we feel that we don't need that particular closure in that area. We don't have an option to say, in this area, we're not going to do anything. But in the other two areas, we're going to implement, option 2 and option 1 or whatever, and that is what we feel is, as a whole for the Gulf of Maine, is going to meet our objectives. And so I agree that after we're through dealing with this particular motion, then I think we need to do something in the big picture here of having a no juvenile habitat option alternative status quo alternative. Is that clear to everybody?
It's clear to me.
Okay, we'll finish up this and then further discussion on this motion. Call the question. All those in favor?
Okay, the next is motion number 8. The committee recommends the council include for analysis in the DEIS alternatives 1 through 5 for Georges Bank.
Committee motion, no second required. I'm going to go to the audience.
And that one, by the way, was 8-1-2.
I'm going to go to the audience for comments. Dave Ferula and then Jim Odlin.
Thank you, David Ferula, for the Fishery Survival Fund. This is probably when we will speak at most at length, at least I will speak most at length today. It's been no secret that the goal of scallop management over the years has been to preserve or gain access to historic scallop grounds. Getting onto the dense beds of scallops that are historically there is the essence of scallop rotational management. It also reduces bycatch, especially if you go up to the northern part of closed area too. Y'all haven't picked up on the yellowtail track stuff. I think that's tomorrow. That's not good news. You're going to have to think about that. And reducing or increasing scallop catch per unit of effort through rotational management is how the SASE model said to reduce scallop habitat impacts, that's what works. We've submitted to the council petitions from about 600 people, and I have them here. I'm not with a summary of names that we're going to provide, and more are coming in, urging the council. These are people that are involved in the fishing industry, are involved vertically in scallop fishing and fishing generally. They're not people who are, you know, pushing a button from Montana in response to a fundraising campaign. These are people who are involved that understand the importance of this. Congressional letters. 10 members of Congress, House and Senate candidates, have submitted letters to you making that same point about how important it is to preserve, to ensure access to these historic scallop grounds. Karen, do you have that? Drew Minkiewicz wanted to bring this today. His wife's, I think, more pregnant than they thought. I don't know how else to say it. So he sent me. These are two scallops that Michael Quinn had brought, and Charlie Quinn had gotten on a trip with VIMS. The one on the right came from the closed area 2 HAPC. If you count the rings, it looks like it was born in 1994, which is right when these closed. The one on the left is what it's supposed to look like. Can't tell me the one on the right's optimizing scallop anything. I mean, we've talked about here with the NSA and reading everybody's phone logs, you know, not having it be 1984. What we don't want is to go back to 1994, where all of a sudden all these closures get layered back in on thin information. This would be a major backward step with these closures. And I want to discuss that in two elements. The first is what's absent from this document that you have here. And then the other is what's present. What's absent is any discussion at all in your alternatives of scallop access area management. It just doesn't exist in there. Everything is a total closure to mobile gear on all those options. That's how you increase catch per unit of effort. On Georges, there have been seasonal restrictions to deal with concentrations of spawning fish and bycatch. We urge you, if you're going to go forward with this at all, to make sure that you include options that allow for access areas in addition to total closures. That's a simple one. And it's one that I don't think would come as a surprise to anybody on the council. I think it's kind of surprising to us that these options weren't included in the first place. with closed area two, the access area, there's 2 points in terms of what's in there. The first is the closure on the bottom, which is smack dab in the middle of the closed area two access area. It's designed to protect haddock habitat. The problem is, number one, there's no information that it does. Number two, it's soft bottom when everything that the cat told you is that haddock associate with hard bottom. And number three, haddock have done just fine, thank you, with this as an access area since 1999. I mean, I understand the need to have a wide range of alternatives, but this is senseless. It's just going to draw fire. It's not going to make any sense to put this in the document because it's arbitrary and capricious based on the record that you all have created. And the benefits, though, to keeping this area open aren't remote. They're beyond speculation. Each trip in there, each access area trip is 6 million pounds of scallops, valued at 10 times that, every access area trip. And for that, you're going to close soft bottom to protect habitat. We've already dealt with the ways to deal with spawning fish. Those are through the seasonal closures. The industry's invested many, many trips and millions of dollars going out there and coming up with a seasonal access program that works. And again, on the northern edge, as I said before, there's no alternative that would allow for access areas. You have one closure that's essentially the northern edge, and you have the second that's the northern edge plus Georgia Shoals. But nowhere do you have none, as Ron Smolowitz pointed out, and nowhere do you have any place for that to be an access area. There are no cat hotspots in either of those areas. The cat hotspots are off the northern part, the northwestern part of the larger area that looks like a shield, where there is actually some haddock bottom where it starts to get deeper that the cat identified, but that's nowhere in the document. We've also, in our comments, provided another sort of a straw man idea for Georges Bank that you ought to consider, if not the exact items that are in there. It combines a series of elements. It combines scallop access areas. It combines groundfish gear management. It combines closures where you actually, the CAD analysis might show that a closure might make sense. And it also includes some measures to serve as a control for the gear restrict, to compare to the gear restricted areas and to compare to access area fishing. That kind of thing, that's the kind of option that's flexible, that's smart, that incorporates the various elements that you ought to be considering in habitat management, groundfish management, and scallop management. It's kind of interesting that you had a joint groundfish habitat committee meeting to deal with these issues, but nobody invited the scallop committee. We urge you to make these more flexible. If these alternatives go forward and these alternatives are implemented, that pretty much takes care of access area fishing out on Georges.
Jim Alvin.
Thank you. Jim Odlin, ground fisherman, owner of 5 offshore boats that fish in this area a lot, and I spent probably 30 years out there myself and further east. I can't understand the idea of protecting juvenile haddock areas in dynamic high-energy sand, which changes constantly every 4 or 5, 6 hours. The haddock resource, I think we've had, you'll hear in the next few months, probably 3 very large year classes out of the last 10. We're currently harvesting at a rate of about 5% of the stock on the U.S. side, while our Canadian counterparts have been achieving up to 98%. From 2007 through 2011, had we have harvested at the same rate as the Canadians, my estimation is we would have brought in $450 million worth of haddock. Instead, those fish have died, literally, of old age. And this is a classic of not achieving OI, right? This is a crime. This is not what this council or the Magnuson Act was about. I thought we were about trying to make things better, and when we had more fish, we could catch them. Apparently, that's been lost. So both of these proposals that include juvenile areas, juvenile closures for haddock areas are both high-energy dynamic environments that change constantly. It will do nothing except for lower our yield on haddock. And by the way, they're right against the border, and those haddock are just going to swim somewhere else, and they'll catch them. So I think we need to take a long and hard of what Magnuson is supposed to be doing, and that's supposed to be making things better, harvesting more at some point. Well, if we have record year classes of fish, record year classes, never been before be seen, and we're getting 5 to 20% of the yield out of those resources, we got to really rethink of what we're doing. And, you know, you look at Chad's analysis this morning, there's probably only about 21 boats that now left that utilize the groundfish resource out in that area to any extent. And those boats will, if this these things go in effect, they have no choice but to go further inshore until they're out of business. Right? That doesn't help anybody. So just for the yield alone, you can't enact these, and you need to go back to the drawing board. As far as the, I guess, Dave, Mr. Fuller considered that other proposal that's not as an alternative as a straw man. Again, there's some aspects of that are okay, but the juvenile haddock area up on the northern edge is sand and mud bottom, and it's dynamic. The current runs there 3 or 4 knots. It's just ridiculous. The yield that will be lost from the haddock fisheries is going to be astronomical. That's the only thing keeping these boats alive right now, is the hope that when these fish get a little bigger, we're going to be able to harvest them. The second thing I noticed about that proposal is that we have a gear-restricted area for trawlers overlapping an area where dredge fishermen are allowed. Now, I don't like to pick on other fisheries, but when did we determine that trawling and scalloping, one had an advantage over bottom impact over the other? And that's what that kind of proposal does. It says that you're going to restrict the gear of a trawler, but let a scallop drag in the same place that you're restricting the gear of a trawler as is. I just don't understand how that kind of thought process can work. And again, I don't like looking at other fisheries and throwing rocks at them, but that's just blatant wrong. So I think that this, the haddock issues of juvenile protection have to come off the table. You could put a trigger on it. If you catch 75% of the quota at any time, then we'll start looking at juvenile protection. We're not catching anywhere near it. Thank you.
Gib.
Good afternoon. Gib Brogan with Oceana. Sorry I don't have any pictures, but I'll keep that in mind for the next time that I give comments, and I'll bring pictures to illustrate some things. But I thought it was interesting that what David Frula brought up as far as the comparison between the two scallop shells that were up there, that he saw that as a sin, and I see that as recovery. That the SASE model was built on a comparison between susceptibility of habitat and recovery, and that you want to maximize recovery and minimize the impacts on susceptible habitats. And I was looking at that and looking at the right-hand side, and that looks like recovery to me. Or as the people in the put together the SASE model call it, emergent epifauna, that's a good thing. And I guess coming from the scallop side of things, it's not such a good thing. But it's a bonus for habitat. We support this motion. This has been well thought out by the CAT and the PDT to begin to address the goals and objectives of the amendment. That if you look at the PDT summary from the 11th of June, under George's Bank, the underlined section talks about meeting the goals and objectives that the relatively small, deeper water, northern edge, juvenile groundfish area and the various George's Shoal habitat areas in combination do not meet the objective of improving protection. So we have to go a little bit further than that. And this range of alternatives does move that forward. and we have some viable alternatives to meet the goals and objectives of the amendment. So we encourage this to move forward, that we think the council will get meaningful public comment from this range of alternatives, and you'll be better informed as you make your final decisions. So we support this one. Thank you.
Peter Hughes, first and then.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to make some brief comments. My name is Peter Hughes. I'm with Atlantic Cape Fisheries, located in Cape May, New Jersey. I have for a number of years been attending council meetings on a regular basis and am the chairman of the Sea Scallop AP. A couple of just bullet points I'd like to hit on. The northern edge, yellowtail currently don't light up in that area. We don't have access to that area that we could greatly reduce our take of yellowtail. Yellowtail has been talked about. ACLs have been developed. AMs have almost been triggered. Yet we don't have an access to an area that surveys currently show there are 30 million pounds of available biomass and very few yellowtail. As far as haddock is concerned, in the areas of closed area 2 where we are allowed to fish, I believe that haddock in Georges Bank is considered fully rebuilt. And as Dave Ferula had said, you know, despite the fact that scallopers are fishing there, those fish have completely rebuilt in those areas. We also fish in that area on a time area management basis, where we have identified times of the year where yellowtail are at their highest concentrations. This is a continuing ongoing survey that is monthly, that is an RSA project in cooperation with Coonam Asset Farms Foundation. These areas have been identified, and when the yellowtail are in the areas, we have during Framework 24 actually voted ourselves out of that area during certain times of year when the yellowtail concentrations are their highest. So the scallop industry does a lot to avoid yellowtail, and is, you know, we need to be developing options to analyze where we can catch scallops, not options to limit where we can catch scallops. Scallops are a success plan. They are a plan that I believe is looked at to emulate on a worldwide basis, because the rotational fishery works. And if we could just make the northern edge and some other areas and include them into rotational fishing, I think that's a benefit to all. Thank you.
Ed.
Eddie Welch from New Bedford, boat owner. I take kind of offense to what the fellow from Oceana, wherever he's from, said about those two scallops. Scallop fishing to me.
And I meant to comment to him too. Let's keep it general. I mean, I should have said something to him. You know.
So you're going to say it to me, okay? But, well, I'm going to tell you what. When you have two scallops like that, if you think weeds, just picture it as a field where you're cultivating. If you think weeds and stuff is a diverse biosphere, well, I mean, nobody would be eating on this planet. That was the perfect example of what happens when you let things lay fallow. They get overrun with shit. I mean, put it, just call a spade. That's what happens. I mean, so that scallop is dead. I don't know how much resource. When you made that toes, and I talked to Charlie, he made those toes, and that whole area was covered with scallops like that. So is that what they want? Is that what the enviros want? They want the whole place to get killed off and covered with barnacles? I mean, if that's what you want, close these places. If you want rational and a managed fishery, then you've got to let people in to work them. I mean, that's the only way it happens. Thank you.
Ed. Anyone else in the audience? Harriet.
Harriet Diedrichson. I'm from the Port of New Bedford. I own a fishing boat, and I'm proprietor of a ship chandlery there. I would ask that you realize that if you put the scallop fishery out of business and hurt what's been accomplished with the rotation and what we were trying to move more forward with for the betterment of the American people, those who eat the scallops, those who earn a living in the process of selling tires, selling ice, selling cars, it's an economy. If you ruin that fishery, you're going to ruin communities up and down the East Coast. And you'll have that to deal with your conscience. I agree with what Mr. Odlin said. I want to see people be able to make money, get that fish out there. I have a friend who is a fisherman, and he turns on his computer at night, and with the AIS, he can see all the Canadians on that eastern side of Area 2 right by the line. I would think you would try to promote your own country and do as much as you can to bring that money and keep it in the United States. Everyone knows we need jobs of all kinds. So I would ask you not to do these things. I know the environmentalists are putting a lot of pressure, but you know what? I know they need opposition to have a soapbox. But my family's been fishing here for 100 years, and if fishing was bad, we wouldn't be here today, everybody in the room, making money in one way or another on fishing. So I wish you'd listen to the former speakers, and please, let's try to open areas, let's try to promote fishing, and be proud of our fishing industry. Thank you.
Can't see who, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, I agree with what has been said by the scholar people. And I certainly believe that these options should be analyzed. I think they'll fail miserably because of the economic tests. I mean, the scallops alone, data has been presented that this area probably produces on average $50 million of economic value of scallops per year, and that will show up in the analyses. What I'm wondering is, where do the alternatives get placed? Do they get placed in this particular motion as another alternative, or is a separate alternative have to be placed on the table? And, you know, I mentioned an option for to analyze no closures, but there's also an option that the Fishery Survival Fund put on the table. What is the appropriate way in the way we're operating to do this? I personally, again, my first statement is the no closure option should be in all these areas. It certainly could be a motion that's made at the end. I have probably 30 or 40 points I can make as rationale on why, for NEPA purposes, a no-closure option should be included. But we've also put an option on the table that includes some closures, some scallop access areas, and while we call them gear management areas, they're actually, that's from the joint PDT, Habitat PDT AP meeting last year, where we discussed a data collection process followed up by gear options. So that was a motion that was made by the AP more than 6 months ago, 8 months ago. So I'm just wondering, how is this process working? Is it appropriate to modify this particular motion, which, again, I support for analysis, or is it appropriate to put another motion on the table? Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what I'd like to do is make a motion to amend and then have a separate motion before we, in this section, but before we move on to another area. So a motion to amend would be, I think I lost the piece of paper. That's not helpful. Here it is. To delete Alternative 2 and Alternative 4 in this section and modify Alternative 3 by removing the southeast part. And if I get a second to that motion, I'll provide the justification.
Seconded by Terry Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've certainly heard from both the scallop and groundfish fisheries on these particular alternatives. The southeast part is speaks to haddock protection, and that resource is abundant. It clearly does not need protection on Georges Bank, and I don't think I need to repeat all of the comments relative to that. Alternative 2 and Alternative 4 include the northeast peak and Georges Shoals to the west, and the amount of scallops that is in those areas is just tremendous. Well over $300 million worth scallops on that bottom. And quite frankly, I don't know how we got here. We had SASE analysis that, really had an output that showed that, an access area, developing one on the northern edge, looks like a real possibility for the scallop fishery. And, I mean, the pictures, this is just... The justification for creating this new area, I don't know how it came about, but it's just not warranted. So I don't think I need to repeat everything that the public comments were on this particular issue. I think we all heard it, and I will leave it at that.
Comments on the motion on the board? Start with Andy.
Yeah, thank you, Terry. Just wanted to brief the council a little bit on some of the background that the CAT and Habitat PDT deliberated on with respect to these options. And with respect to the southeast part, I can say that there was a split opinion among the PDT and the CAT whether the southeast part was necessary. We had quite a vigorous debate about it. There was a significant number of people on the technical teams that felt that closed area 2 in the framework 48 analysis was shown to have a very positive benefit for haddock, and they felt it was important. Secondly, a hotspot analysis that the CAT did showed that this area was appeared to be, for various reasons that we didn't know at the time, important for juvenile haddock and yellowtail spawning. Yellowtail is a stock that is overfished, so the technical team members felt that that was important. And that it was felt that protection of haddock in closed area 2, even though the stock was at the target, that it would help enhance productivity of the stock, even though it was at the target. Through some additional work, we found some additional papers showing, published papers showing that this area was important for yellowtail, and also harbored a much higher abundance of polychaetes in particular, which is a food source for haddock, that could have an effect. I think that some members would feel that that effect is short-term, that some seasonality of this area might be appropriate rather than a year-round closure, which could allow for some access to that area seasonally. The haddock in the literature occupy hard substrates at small size early in the season, and then occupy softer substrates and sand later in the season, particularly in this area, but it didn't mean it wasn't somehow important to Haddock. So there's a strong component of the technical teams that feel this is important, and I have to say that many of those came from the center. So we've got some important thoughts about this area being necessary for consideration in the amendment. Can I do the northern area first a little bit? These areas that were put forward by the technical team included the deeper areas that were identified as important for hot spots, particularly for Haddock. So they were modified in contrast to the statement made earlier during the public comments. They do include those waters where the Haddock hotspots were. There's also cod hotspots that extend into Canada and possibly at a higher abundance level. The northern edge would also show up in the hotspot analysis if the stock were at a different level. We thought about proposing a closure over here in the northern edge of Canada, but we realized that would be in bad form. So we kept it on the U.S. side. But so to give you a background of the discussions that the CAT and the PDT had with respect to these proposals. Thank you.
John Bullard.
We're not going to support this because we think these options need to be analyzed, and we think you're jumping the gun. But I do want to emphasize that the numbers put forth by the scallop industry are, significant, and that my mouth isn't going to get around this, but a practica, I told you, wasn't going to get around it. Practicability analysis is part of this, and those numbers get weighed in on that, and it'd have to pass muster on that, and lost revenue is one of the things that have to get weighed, and those numbers are significant.
Mary Beth Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Relative to the southeast part and Andy's comments on perhaps seasonal closures might be the most appropriate thing, so you need to think in terms of what would the correct seasonal closure be. And the best way to get that information is through research, and we don't have the research. If you look at the research that's been done relative to the presence and absence of yellowtail through the research set aside in scallops, that would be the way to go. It wouldn't be to have this proposed closure for Haddock, and I hadn't seen any references to yellowtail in the material that I read in this document. And additionally, on the northern edge, hotspots for Haddock, that is a healthy resource. We've got more Haddock out there than we've ever seen, so I don't know why we would prioritize that. And that you did mention, however, Andy, hotspots for cod. So the scallop fishery doesn't catch cod. Occasionally we have the issues with, flatfish, and I think that's very clear from all of the data. So the question I would have is that if we were to leave these options in the document, those areas outlined in blue, which are called, I have more papers here, adverse effects management areas, would these allow the development of scallop access areas to occur in these areas here?
I think with respect to the southeast part, it could allow an access program that to be defined seasonally. There is information in the RSA program about yellowtail, and it's not just about catch rates relative to scallop yield, but also the spawning occurring there in May and June. So I think that something there could be defined better to improve the practicality relative to a year-round closure as you might think of as an adverse effects area per se to mobile bottom tending gear. You asked me about the northern area with cod. All the cod hotspots were over on the Canadian side, but doesn't mean that some of the areas on the northern edge are also important to some level of cod protection. And it's not about cod catch, it's about effects on the substrates and bottom biology relative to what's important for cod survival, not so much catch. Thank you.
Mary Beth.
So I would just point out that we already have seasonal measures in place for access areas relative to the presence and absence of yellowtail. Whether or not, you know, the groundfish fishery would need such a measure, I really don't know, since they have hard allocations of yellowtail that they have to stay within those amounts. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think that provides a justification for keeping this, you know, southwest parts in this document. So, and the other part is, you also just said there are no cod hotspots on the northern edge. I'm comfortable with the motion I have proposed here.
Terry Alexander.
Yeah, I'm looking at the hotspot analysis here. I happen to bring the paper with me. And there are no cod hotspots on the U.S. side. There's two down way south in the middle of Georgia's, but nothing up on the northern edge. And the closest one, there's a small one that might be 10 miles to the northeast of the Canadian line, and then the rest of them are 20, 30 miles northeast, up on the northeast peak. So, I mean, you know, to anecdotally say that we might be doing something for cod on our side of the line, I don't know. But, you know, we're looking at the actual numbers here and actual figures from the juvenile areas and stuff, and I'm not seeing it.
David Pierce.
Well, this obviously is a very controversial amendment. This document's been in development for a long time. The database is quite extensive. The analysis is intricate. I would like to have as many options as possible to be examined, to be analyzed, with an intent for us to do that practicability analysis, enabling us to determine where we have to make some very significant compromises between providing access to the scallopers, for example, to get scallops on the northern edge versus, of course, area that is considered to be sensitive, vulnerable. That analysis will be critical for the final decisions that we make. I've spent a lot of time looking at the data provided by the CAT and by my own staff, Catherine Ford, and I'm almost at a loss because much of the area that has been identified as possible options is the cobble and boulder area on the U.S. side of the Canadian U.S.-Canadian boundary. And wouldn't you know it, looking at the figures, the bullseye of scallop abundance on the northern edge is right in the options that we have to consider. Vulnerable habitat. So it's a real dilemma, to say the least. There is the vulnerable habitat right in that area, and that is the bullseye of the scallop aggregation on Georgia's bank. So I want as many options as possible for us to analyze. The motion that has been made by Mary Beth is attractive, but when looking at the boundary that is in alternative three, it seems to encompass the bullseye of scallop abundance. So I'm not sure this is going to get the scallopers what they want. It doesn't seem that it will. It'll also take away a tremendous amount of opportunity for scallopers in the area. Regarding cod abundance in the area, again, looking at data provided to the Habitat Committee, I believe, back in January, or it may have been just to the plant development team, on the northern edge of Georgia's, within the areas that have been identified as possible options, high concentrations of cod. I'm assuming it's juvenile cod. It stands out as red and yellow right on that northern edge in the area that Mary Beth has offered up as a possible alternative. No criticism. I mean, it seems like a logical approach to take, but I'm still struggling with this. I don't know what option is best. Therefore, I want as many analyses as possible so we can get ourselves into a position to make some very informed decisions about what in the world we need to do to deal with vulnerable habitat on Georgia's Bank and also to deal with the need of the scallop fleet to get access to these very extensive scallop beds that are there, that have been there for a while, that are growing, that are aging, that are also contributing to the spawning potential of sea scallops on Georgia's Bank, and that's another one. I'm going to oppose the motion only because I want to be consistent with my previous views as to options to be brought to options to be further analyzed, to be brought to public hearing. I don't want to exclude anything that actually might turn out to be the best alternative for us to select when we finally get to that decision point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's two things here that I'd like to point out. First of all, alternatives 3 and 5 actually increase access to the scallop resource on the northern edge. They cover considerably less than what is closed up there right now. But another issue, the council last September decided not to consider scallop access areas in this action. So if we're going to give them the option, it's my understanding that we would have to put that back into the amendment. Or am I wrong there? I'm looking for some advice on this one. Do they need to have a scallop access area within this amendment in order to create an amendment, an access area in that area?
Well, I'm not sure I can answer this directly. Obviously, Mr. Frula thinks, yes, they need an access area in this amendment, perhaps, but maybe he's saying no. Anyway, I think the plan as you pointed out, was to deal with the scallop access issues in a following scallop framework. Deirdre's shaking her head, yes. So I don't believe scallop access areas have to be in this amendment.
That was my understanding, and that was at the time I voted in favor of not considering it. And I just want to make sure that we're in the right position here. So I don't know.
John Quinn.
Yeah, I support the amendment and want to kind of maybe have my remarks to a potential no closure alternative in all the sections. I'm not sure if procedurally we're going to get to that, so I want to share a couple of my thoughts in the context of this amendment. I think we're really missing the fact that there's been this gigantic reduction in effort both in the scallop and groundfish fleet all across the East Coast. If you look at the dramatic cuts we've had on the groundfish, increased mesh size, the complex bottom that exists that vessels cannot go in by virtue of getting hung up, that's got to be factored in here. And on the scallop side, 33 days, certainly nobody's crying for the scallop industry, but they voluntarily took a huge reduction this past year, and it's going to be much more than 30% that been discussed, because they're not getting anywhere near the 13,000 these other closed area trips. So I think it's critical that we consider this no closure alternative, and partly through supporting this amendment. That northern edge area really is the future of the scallop industry. It's nearly a $500 million industry on the East Coast, and I think that it's a shame if we take positions not considering that there's been this gigantic reduction already in effort. And I would venture to guess that, you know, in crew size reductions, and I could go on and on, but I support this amendment, but more so support a no-closure alternative in all the areas we're discussing here.
Dave? Hazel.
Yeah, I have a question for Andy. Andy, do the Canadians have any closures on their side?
As far as I'm aware, just Emerald Bank, which is focused on Haddock, but hasn't been as effective as intended.
Right, but no closures on George's?
Maybe Tom's aware of something that I'm not.
I mean, I think we've got to be careful. They prohibit groundfish fishing activity usually from about 1 February through the 1st of June on their side. So
okay,
I don't know if you consider that an area closure.
Yeah, I do. That's a spawning closure. And those I support. And the reason I asked the question is very pointed, because the areas that light up are on the Canadian side of the line. And as Andy said, it would be bad form to close the Canadians' waters, but maybe we should do it anyway. Because quite frankly, from where I sit, we have done a crappy job of managing George's Bank for the Americans, and we've done a hell of a job of managing for the Canadians. Matter of fact, I'm surprised the Canadians don't pay an American lobbyist to come here to every meeting to urge us to keep closed area 2 closed forever. They don't have to because they got us doing it for them. They could save some money. They harvest 94% of their fish. We harvest less than 20. This is idiotic. The complex bottoms on the Canadian side of the line, that's the majority of it. It's the Northeast Peak. Everybody knows it. All these options are here for one reason and one reason only, to satisfy a group of people who won't go sue the Canadians. I don't know why. Go sue them. But you're happy to sue us. So, from my personal perspective, I would support this because I think we have too many options in the document. I've been trying to zero them out all day. That's number one. And number two, when you go forward in the final options, which I won't be here for, whatever you do, whatever area ends up closed against the Canadian border, I hope you carve at least 10 miles out of it on that line so that the Americans can have a chance to harvest the fish before they swim to Canada, get caught by them, and get sold back to us. This has got to cease. This is not successful management. Thank you.
Anyone? Laura?
You said it almost begrudgingly.
You're way too sensitive.
I know, apparently. You know, you get targeted enough, you know. I just want to comment on the scallop situation. The thinking, as I recall, was that we had to open the area through habitat, and then we put something into the framework that said, when this happens, then we will develop this as an access area. So the fact is that we need an option within habitat to fish that area for the scallopers to get in there. But it doesn't. We don't have to make an access program that we will do through the scallops. And then I just wanted to support what John Quinn said because I got hammered for that same thinking earlier. You can't say that going from 1,100 permits to 400 permits, there is not a positive impact on the habitat. It's not just because you set low ACLs. We have so many fewer fishermen fishing the ocean than we ever have before. There is a definite net benefit to the habitat to have fewer boats out there, period. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Dave, did he leave?
Thank you. The last council member who spoke made the point that I wanted to make was that you need some all your options in there say anything that is an AEMA, Adverse Effects Management Area, is totally closed to bottom tending mobile gear. That is inconsistent with then turning around and trying to create an access area in a scallop framework. We could wait for the next habitat amendment, but then I'd be retired.
Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just quickly, that area in the Southeast Park, I know not historically contributed probably much more than 30% of the haddock in the past, but since the areas that typically we were catching George's Bank haddock haven't been producing much. Southeast part, I would say in the last 5 or 6 years, has been north of 50% of the landings of haddock. And I think U.S. is averaging around 10% in the last decade on our haddock yield. We have a 30,000 metric ton tack this year, and the frameworks we just approved go roughly 30,000, 60,000, 90,000, which means our yield percentages just keep going down. If we close the area with 50% of the haddock, and I hope the economic analysis in these alternatives is going to specifically look for that and not come up with something that's going to say, well, if you close that area, perhaps they'll just shift it and catch it in another area. There's a reason why they've been catching it in that area. So we're going to have to look at the landings of haddock. I would propose, why are we looking at protecting haddock when we're yielding 8 or 10%? I would just think prudent management would say maybe when we get to 50 or 75% of the yield of the haddock stock, we could start to look at some other protections. But I'm not talking about reducing the biomass. I'm just talking about catching 50% of what we're allowed or 75% of what we're allowed. We're catching 8 or 10, and we're looking right at a spot where I'm going to say 50% or more of the haddock landings have been produced in the last 5 or 6 years, and we're proposing it for a closure. It just seems, from a groundfish perspective, not to be a wise move.
Back to the council. To the motion. Call a question. All those in favor of the motion to amend. Nine in favor. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Abstention? 1. Oh, okay. So the motion fails. Passes 9-8. Okay, we're on to the main motion as amended. Further discussion? All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4 opposed. 13-4, the motion carries. Dave Preble. No, we're pushing right through.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I've asked if I could just make another motion in this section before we move to another area. So thank you for that. I think that one thing that did come up during this discussion is that there really is, not an alternative in the document that would allow for the full utilization of a access area on the northern edge for scallops. Somebody, as Dave Preble did point out, if you look at alternatives 3 and 5, the area that would be closed is smaller, but it still would strand a lot of biomass. So what I would like to do is make a motion to add an alternative to this section of the document under George's Bank, and that it would be based on the proposal from the Fishery Survival Fund, except that it would exclude measures to protect juvenile, to provide for juvenile protection for haddock. That's the only part. I think that I've talked to the staff about it, and they understand what the proposal is. There was some difficulty in me being very specific to a line, though, however, because I just wasn't able to do that. So it seemed to be better to just be general and reference the Fishery Survival Fund alternative absent the haddock protection areas. And if I get a second, I can provide some further justification.
Is there a second to that motion? John Quinn.
So, I mean, I think that there is a need to have at least one alternative in the document that would allow for the full utilization of harvesting the scallops that we all know are on the northern edge. I mean, we've been talking about this now for years. Certainly, the entire time that I've been on the council, and it was talked about well before I was on the council. So to not have at least one alternative that would allow the harvest of this biomass, I think is problematic, and that is the justification for my motion.
Chairman Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think based on the experience that we've already had in looking at this issue relative to the Northern Edge and taking into consideration the testimony we've heard today, this is clearly going to be one of the more complex questions for the council to ultimately deliberate and decide. The scale of the trade-offs economically here may be among the greatest that are considered in the course of this amendment, but also there are complementary objectives and some competing objectives in that area. And certainly with respect to complementary objectives, the issue of scallop yield, but also the yellowtail consideration is an important one. And I would suggest that it would be beneficial ultimately to have some more contrast among the options in that specific area. And so I think this advances that. This would give the council some more contrast among options relative to what to do with respect to that area around the Northern Edge to make a selection that at least benefits from that broader range of options. Because I'm not sure that you have that much contrast right now with options like Alternative 5 and Alternative 3. It seems like this would at least advance the range of options that you have to consider. I think, you know, again, that the ultimate decision will reflect all those complexities, but it's a very important question relative to the amendment.
Tom Neese.
So I guess I got a question. I'm looking at the FSF letter, and without respect to the areas, the thing I'm a little concerned about, it says create a scallop access area in the Northern Edge closed area. And this council decided earlier in September not to create scallop access areas in the omnibus amendment because of the concern that it would expand the scope of the amendment. And so it's not clear to me if, when this says to be based on the proposal, whether this includes generating a scallop access area and addressing those issues.
Thank you, Tom, for those comments, because that was not my intent, and I should have caught that as I was, I mean, I did know that was in there, but I had forgotten. So my intent here is to use the area as defined in the Fishery Survival Fund alternative, not to create a scallop access area in this amendment, because as was noted earlier, we decided in September that we could do that in a scallop action and not here. So perhaps I would be perfecting my motion to say to add an alternative under George's Bank that would be based on the area proposed in the Fisheries Survival Fund letter.
Is that all right with the seconder? Okay. John Bullard.
It may be different than an original intention. That doesn't bother me. The three things I think are very good about this motion that Mary Beth offered. One, it's a lot of scallops. Two, it's very few yellowtail. Three, it's very high catch per unit effort, which is always good for habitat. And so all of those things I think are very good things worthy of our thinking on the fly.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that in light of the fact that we have approved for analysis options that are clearly inimical to one particular industry and seem to favor others, but that we do this to analyze to make sure that we're right about that, that we've got the numbers right, based on that reasoning, I support this motion explicitly, and I think it should move forward.
Doug Grau.
So the graphic isn't up there yet, but I just want to be clear that we're talking about that green box on the northern edge there. That's what we're talking about here.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Michelle.
I guess either Deirdre or I could ask. I think we're a little uncertain as to exactly what the proposal means. The green area is described as a potential scallop access area, and I think if we've established that that's not something we're going to identify in this amendment, then that would be sort of some kind of a placeholder for an access area. And then the hatched area that's larger, that I think is, we're zoomed in a little far on the chart to fully see it, but that would be a gear modified area with the types of measures we've discussed for trawl gears, the raised ground cables or the no ground cables. And then the pink areas would be complete mobile gear closures, except you're excluding, Mary Beth, the top one along the edge of the bank. So I guess I'm just a little unclear on exactly what the measure would be in the green area and on what is that.
We want to make sure we understand the proposal, and I think the hatched portion is underneath the green as well, right? So this alternative is actually a larger gear-restricted area, which is all hatched, and your motion would then be setting the stage, saying in a future to be specified in terms of the allocations and the seasons and the details in a future action, that would all be determined in the scallop plan, but these are the boundaries that the fishery would be bound, you know, couldn't go beyond those green boundaries. But the alternative is actually primarily a gear-restricted area with a small portion, the pink part, that would be closed to all bottom-tending gears all year, and then the green part would be potentially a scallop access area to be determined in some future action.
To the question, that's my understanding of it, but I think to be more clear, it might be better if we had somebody from the Survival Fund speak to it, which could be Ron or Dave.
Dave.
But I think the way Deirdre interpreted it was pretty darn close.
Thank you, David Frula. On the green area, what the straw man alternative was that some or all of that green area could be access area, meaning the rest could be open bottom. You have two alternatives in your document. One that it has a more narrow, the alternative five, the narrower closure alternative up there, and then you have the one that extends to the west onto George's Shoals. We think ultimately an access area, you know, on the northern edge may be the strike the right balance. So we want to make sure that whatever you consider open bottom on the George's Shoals area. So we just wanted to make sure that you left yourself the options to do that. And again, how you want to do that, I hope we've made ourselves clear. This is work that I don't know why it didn't happen at the committee level, but that's kind of what we're working towards, is have that, some of it open, some of it authority for an access area, or all of it access area if that's what you ultimately choose, but give yourself a range of options here so that you can think about it all constructively as you go along.
Tom?
David, could you come back, please? And I'm just trying to save Deirdre a walk up. I guess we're struggling to understand the chart, because you said you're talking about open areas, but when we look at the chart, much of that area underneath the green is a crosshatch area, which indicates to us that you're suggesting that's a gear management area.
It would be a gear management area for groundfish cables, for trawls. And again, the way that we minimize, the way the SASE model said to minimize the impact of scallop dredges was not to change them, but to put them on areas of high densities of scallops. So that's to the extent that there was seeming to be an imbalance there, that was the rationale.
So I'm looking at Michelle and Deirdre. Are you clear now? And Andy, on what they're suggesting?
Gene.
Well, will there be another Habitat Committee meeting at which these things can be discussed further, or before you come out with a... You guys want to take the rest of the time? You want to leave for a day, I get it.
Yeah, so Gene. Just a further clarifying question maybe for the not being familiar off the top of my head with the FSF proposal, and in light of the questions that were just asked by staff, the idea of this, and maybe I'm totally missing the intent of this, but putting this alternative in would not open the area at all for scallopers until some future action. Is that, was that what you had proposed?
What we had said was you need that placeholder. I don't know if you call it a placeholder, because it's not. It's more important than a placeholder, because you're saying that area is not closed to mobile tending bottom gear if a scallop access area is created. So it's more important than a placeholder. But you create the authority in the habitat amendment for the scallop access areas. I think what I'd like to say, though, and when I said I underlined the word not necessarily all of it, that you leave yourself the option to create a habitat area in what was that alternative five, I mean an access area, and then deal with the Georgia Shoals, which had been open for all time, and leave that open. You may end up with basically two kinds of options there for scalloping then. One which is a full access area across the whole thing, authority for that. The other is in the alternative five area. What you could also do is just with the alternative five that you still have in the document, create the authority for that to be an access area, which may be easier than trying to bifurcate this.
I'm going to go to Ron, and then I'm thinking I'm going to bring it back to the council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz. This proposal, the underlying proposal, the crosshatch area, is from motion number 3 of the joint PDT Habitat AP meeting. And one of the problems, we had hours of discussion about this. One of the problems is that we don't have data. And to enact a gear measure, we had no idea of how to do the analysis, because we don't know what gear would be fished in this area once it's opened. We're under a totally new management regime for groundfish. So what the group thought was going to be a good idea was to open the area and put in a high level of monitoring of the fleets that are fishing in that area. And then we would have a baseline of what gear is being used, when it is being used, what species are being caught. At the same time, gear work, Dave is involved with it, will be examining the options of modifying the sweeps and bridles and what have you. So then we would have an intelligent data set, and we would have, this would be frameworkable to put in gear restrictions as needed to minimize the adverse impact to groundfish. At the same time, the way we minimize the adverse impact due to scalloping is by creating access areas and controlling the frequency and intensity. The size of the access area there is one option. It could also, in a scallop framework, one could look at a much larger option that goes right down to 4130, for example, and maybe to the west. So this would allow a host of different options to be developed over time in the groundfish plan and scallop plan to minimize the adverse impacts of the fishery. But primarily, this is an option that would allow for data collection. But again, that component was a part of the motion made by the joint PDT-AP on data collection. And again, the justification was we have no idea what's going to take place in this area. And this would really move us forward. Thank you. One key thing to remember, and we recognized this when we chose the yellowtail bycatch closures in the last scallop framework, is if the National Marine Fisheries Service does not have money to do research that's fishery independent. So the only source of information we have now is fishery dependent information from observed trips. And if you close an area, you don't get the data. It would be much better to allow access, allow the fleet in there, and then and require a level of reporting on the gear types being used and what they're catching and when they're catching it to be able to design a much more appropriate management regime. Thank you.
Let me just make a comment. I think that Tom and I were just talking. I was asking him what, you know, what the schedule for Habitat PDT meetings are and Habitat committee meetings subsequent to this. There aren't any schedule, but the sense is that the details of working out this plan will need to be done offline. I don't see us sitting here cranking out all the details on this. I think it's going to be, or you know, have to be done with the PDT and with the committee. And that's why I want to bring it back to the council to see whether we're going to make this an alternative, and then we perhaps got some other decisions to make after that. So that's why I'm bringing it back. I had Matt on the list, but we're going to, and then Terry, we're going to try and move on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got some concerns about this. First off, we're not factoring in, well, I think it's important that if we develop this option, we factor in the cost of the lost value in codfish revenues in that. I mean, we're making an opportunity cost here. We're deciding to manage this area for scallops preferred over cod, and I think if we're going to do an economic analysis, we need to include the value of lost productivity on the codfish fishery. A couple other things that also concern me about this, we're assuming that high CPUE is a constant. It's not a constant. We know that from 10 years ago, 12 years ago, there was the opening of the southern half of closed area. Two research showed that CPUE for the scallop fishery dropped off pretty quickly. I agree that minimized contact time with the bottom is ideal. Go in, get your catch, get out. But we can't assume that CPUE is going to remain fixed and constant forever and ever. This is something that's dynamic and changing, and we need to factor that into it. Finally, the spawning potential of that area is phenomenal. Tien and Stokesbury et al. Published a paper in 2009 showing that the larvae produced by the scallops up in the northern edge deposit throughout Georgia's Bank, the east side of the Great South Channel, parts of closed Area 1. I'm concerned, frankly, that we may be killing the goose that laid the golden egg if we start harvesting that seed stock as well.
Terry Alexander.
Yeah, I just had a question from Michelle. Oh, where'd she go? Maybe Andy. Maybe you can answer it, Andy. This area, the pink area, basically is the motion that we passed on the 17th in the Habitat, Joint Habitat Committee meeting. Is that right? Yeah. Like the pink area?
No, it's not exactly the same area. It's much smaller than the area that the committee passed on the 17th.
The one with the closure in the pink, and then the hash marks around it would be like a modified ground cable. It's pretty close.
There was a modified ground cable area, but one of the motions was to include the northern edge recommended by the CAT, and this is much smaller than that.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to agree with the comments that you made. I think that would be consistent with the way the wording of the motion is currently, that the alternative would be based upon the area proposed in the Fishery Survival Fund, and that everybody has an understanding that, you know, some of the details need to be worked out and probably best done by the Habitat Committee with groundfish or not, depending on how that moves forward in the PDT.
Tom Dempsey.
Yeah, just quickly, I was effectively going to say the same thing as Mary Beth. I think the pathway that you've outlined in terms of developing this as we go forward is the right one. And I think it makes sense to include a really robust range of alternatives. And so I can support this. I'm not sure I'll support it at final action, but I think it's really valuable to get a full range analyzed and really understand all the impacts of some of these actions.
Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion? One, two, 17. Dave, what is the next motion?
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't sure if it was appropriate. I wanted to offer at some point a no-closure amendment globally for all regions. I wasn't sure if it was now or at the end of our discussion, so I certainly wanted to make it. I didn't want to lose the place if we were leaving the Georges Bank discussion.
And my response is I think doing it at the end of all of these motions for the global one would be fine.
Thank you. I'll do that then.
Okay. Dave, what is our next motion?
I'm getting drifty. The committee recommends the council include for analysis and alternatives 1, 2, 3, and 5 for the Great South Channel. We move into the Great South Channel.
I think we're at a juncture here whether we want to press on with this. My concern is we're doing some stuff on the fly here, which is typical of when we get towards the end of our day. My thinking would be for us to I was going to try and do one more, but this one isn't going to be easy, and I'm wondering whether we should call it a day for today and attempt to start at 8 in the morning. I'm seeing most heads go this way, not a lot go this way. So I think that's what we'll do. So we will adjourn until tomorrow morning at...
Should we table that just to be clear?
He didn't make the motion.
Oh, okay.
He didn't
Sorry.
Make the motion.
Okay.
Okay. We'll see you at 8 o'clock.
Okay. Can we make a... About that yourself?
Oh, yeah. And one... Tom, do you have a...
Just a quick announcement. We have in the room Dr. Jim Silikowski, and after we clear away the table, he's going to give a briefing on some spiny dogfish research that he has accomplished. We've had a number of requests that it be made available to council members, so we'll probably try and kick that off no later than 6:15.